The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Consider yourself a home dreamer? One who watches the renovation programs on television? Are you just waiting for the right time to build or renovate your dream home? Welcome to Winning the Dream Home Race with Steve Clipp Architect. Steve has spent 3 decades learning how to win at the dream home game. He has insights into the psychology of space that could strengthen your marriage and soothe your soul. He has an understanding of market forces and the methodologies of construction that could save you thousands of dollars, and he could make you a winner. Now, here's Steve Clipp.
Hi, people. Welcome back. Today I'm going to talk about site planning and landscaping. And in large part, who should take control of that? I was asked to do 2 things this week, or did 2 things, that kind of got me thinking about this. First, I'm on the architectural review board of a gated community in the area, and I was asked to meet with the owners of a lot that is not built on yet and to discuss the placement of their house from a community point of view and how it relates to the houses around it. There's concern in the community that the wrong placement of this house will be detrimental to the overall streetscape and to the, you know, detrimental to the enjoyment of the houses on either side. This is sort of thing that you need to consider when you're designing your house. And if you're in a community with strong, you know, community rules and regulations, that the community has a voice in, and to basically protect the homeowners from the mistakes of their, you know, future neighbors. But that was one thing. The other one is I happened to visit a friend this week and saw for the first time their home, you know, their first home. I know them at their vacation home up in Blowing Rock. And I was struck by a couple of things about this home. Of course, I'm an architect, so my mind's always thinking along architectural lines. They have a really beautiful classic home built in the 1930s. And it's kind of in the southern, it's not really Georgian, but it's somewhat a Georgian home with a southern front, meaning the 2-story front porch along the whole front with the 6 2-story high, you know, white columns. And looks really impressive. The house really is impressive. It is beautiful and has a high level of detail built into it that really sets it apart and says that it was a grand home when it was built back in 1930. What was interesting to me, though, is that the lot that the house sits on is a corner lot in probably the most prestigious neighborhood in the city. And so it's a very prestigious location. However, the lot is slightly downhill from the street. it drops, you know, maybe 6 feet from the street down into the lot to the front of the house. And the house itself was built low to the ground, so that one of the kind of first attributes or rules of thumb is that you always want your house to be up from the street. You always want to rise to enter a house. And this was an opportunity, or wasn't, it was more a drawback of the lot, which they did not overcome in the design. And this is the thing, you can buy any lot. But the whole idea is that during the design process, you identify what are the positives and what are the negatives. And you maximize the positives, and you try to figure out how to negate or how to conceal the negatives. So they didn't do it. They could have easily simply raised the house up 2 feet. So you came down into the lot on this grand circular driveway, but then you actually stepped up to the house. And that was one thing. The other thing was that the house was built right at the back of the lot, so that on the inside you walk in and there's a beautiful foyer. And beyond that is a beautiful, very large dining room with this big, you know, really nice picture window. It's probably 8 feet wide and 8 or 10 feet high. Problem is that they built the house at the back of the lot, and that picture window looks over the neighbor's backyard. So that's not so great. There is a way of fixing it. The same thing occurred in the kitchen, which is also on the back of the house. And great big, beautiful window in the kitchen, a beautiful kind of half-circular arching window with a lot of stained glass worked into it. Very pretty. But, again, you're not looking over your private backyard. You're looking into the neighbor's backyard. And as much, especially at night, the neighbor is looking into, has a full view into your house. So you wish when they built the house that they'd raised it up a bit to give it a little more grandeur, and that they brought it at least 10 feet further from the back property line. That would allow you more potential to set up a backyard and set up screening from the house behind. This is, you know, I talk in this show about what is your dream home and how do you design it? Well, the best home for you, the best home design, is the one that matches you and your dreams, and at the same time maximizes the potential of the site. And this is one of the two, it's two things, matching your dreams and maximizing the site. Now, a question that I get often, or people think about often, is when should you hire an architect? I believe that's the first thing you should do, is hire the architect, or at least be in a conversation with an architect or a couple of architects. When you go looking for a lot, you identify the ones that you're interested in, the ones that have potential, and then get the architect to go out there with you and look at them. If you've talked to him enough to know the general style of house that you want to build, and he can picture that, has that in his mind, he can go out there and he can talk about each lot and compare them. You know, what are the pluses of the lot? Does it have a great view? Is it in a prestigious location, or does it, for instance, slope upward from the road and give you the opportunity to set up a real grand approach to your house? Those are pluses. You can also talk about the negatives of the lots. You know, is there road noise? Do you have a lack of privacy? Or are you below the road? All of these are negatives. Or it could be just simply there's not a tree on the lot and as flat as a pancake. The architect will understand which of these negatives can be overcome through design and which of them really can't. If you've got a house closed in very tightly with houses on either side and in the back, getting a grand view probably isn't going to happen. But this is, you know, my first point is that an architect will help you pick the best lot. And just like everything, you say, well, every lot out there is going to be bought by somebody and there's going to be a house built on it. Well, why not for your house? Why not pick the best one with the most advantages and the least negatives and let somebody else deal with the worst lot? Let someone else deal with the ones with negatives. And you know, the negatives could just simply be, well, because of slope and drainage and soil quality, it's going to cost a lot of money to build. That is a definite negative, and that has to be taken into consideration. Okay. Follow-up question to that is, who should take the lead in site planning? And, you know, once again, I may be prejudiced, but once again, I believe the architect should take the lead in site planning, not the contractor and not the landscape architect, although it's possible with the landscape architect, but in general, the architect comes first. The architect has the vision for how to place a house on that lot to maximize it. And that's what has to happen this time is the maximizing the site potential. So when I first talk to people, I talk to them and hear about their dreams. And then I go to the site saying at this point, they've selected the site. You know, they call me up. We bought this lot. We've seen some of your work and, you know, we'd like to talk to you about it. And I talk to them about the type of house they want, and then I go out to the lot, and I spend some time there. I walk the lot, every inch of it. I sit and commune with it. This sounds strange, but sometimes you just simply find a rock, and you sit on it, and you try to absorb the lot, what is how it slopes, where the trees are, how the sun strikes it, what are the views, what are the neighbors. You're just sitting there and communing with the lot. And what you're doing at the same time is the architect, a good experienced architect, has a lot of knowledge about what can work, about what everything means, what that slope means, what the water course running through the property means. The, you know, you can achieve so much potential on a lot, or not. And you look at all the things about it, like there's this great old tree, this beautiful tree. How do we save it? How do you build a house that celebrates that tree instead of one that cuts it down and hauls it off? And how do you achieve the views? Same time, You sit there and you commune and you understand the negatives of the lot. You understand the neighbor who has a sight line onto your property. You understand the, I'm trying to think of what negatives there can be. But the rule of thumb is, sorry, I'm getting kind of turned around. I'll give you an example of this. Is one of the rules of thumb, the basic rules of thumb of real estate, is that the house should sit above the road. And I've got a follow-up to that, which is the front door of the house should be above the road. Had clients come to me, they had bought a beautiful lot, a very expensive lot in a really prestigious neighborhood. The thing is, it sloped down from the road, and the natural house site was, again, about 6 feet, 8 feet below the road. And then it continues to drop off on the back, and there are beautiful views to the back. But your approach to the house is downhill. So there's a lot of, there are a lot of things you can do to minimize that. And one of the things is, as I did with this house, is you immediately, when you come off the road, you drop down and you achieve whatever drop in elevation that there is right by the road. Then you come in, you stay relatively flat with the driveway, and it sweeps in front of the house, and now you pick up the house. So you pick up the house by a couple of feet, and that's relatively inexpensive. It costs, maybe $1,000 a foot to raise a house up. Just another level block. So that now you've come into the house, you've achieved a drop, now it's level, and you're going up to the house. That's a way of fixing one of the, common things I find is negative on lot. The other, the architect can envision the house on the land. And so, like I said, look to the architect to take the lead. I have, a lot of examples of what goes right and what goes wrong. And a lot of it amounts to big money. I can think of a house up in the mountains, and up in the mountains, the view is everything. You're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to get a view lot. Here is a house where it was a spec house built by a builder who had great visions about all the neat things he wanted to do in the house. He did not pay attention to where the view was and ended up that the laundry room, the best view in the house, is in the laundry room. The great room, which he had all these visions about how to create the great room and, the soaring ceiling and all of this and the big fireplace, doesn't have a view. That cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you're going to spend money on positives, make sure that the house design, continues through with those positives. That's, and then, stepping down a scale, I was also reviewing a house for this community that I'm on the review board for. And a builder came in, again, a spec house, and often they have in their mind the house they want to build. And they're going to stick on that lot come hell or high water. In this case, the lot, the house is nice. And the house really is a decent, impressive house. However, the garage projected slightly in front of the house. And in this case, everyone approaching that house would approach from the left. And your first view of that house would be the left-hand view. That's where the garage was. So we could not get the builder to flip the house so that the front door, the entrance was on the left as you approached the house, as you drove down the street. No, he insisted on leaving the garage on the left, in which case you drove down the street and you saw a garage. And only when you got beyond the house did you actually see the really impressive front of this house. That house was attractively priced and sat on the market for a year when other houses were selling because it looked like nothing. Your first impression of the house was blah. It's a garage. This is what I'm talking about with, you know, examples. Another one that I see quite often is you build the house and the back of the house is built kind of into the grade. And so you put a patio out there, and the patio usually is, you know, it's like 12 feet wide, 14 feet wide, but the grade is going uphill. And so that the land all the way around this back patio is higher than the patio. You can do that, but it has implications in how that patio feels. It will feel more closed in. It will feel more tight. So you have to figure out how to free your outdoor spaces from the constraints that they are. I've been babbling a bit, but when I come back, I'll try and get on to more succinct, impressive things. First question when I come back is, what about the driveway? Where you place your driveway can make or cost you 5-10% on the house when you go to resell it. So when we're back from break.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk. Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ever wondered what private investigators really do and how they go about solving cases? Each week, PIs Declassified gives a glimpse into this little-known world. Join your host, Francie Kaler, a noted private investigator, in conversations with detectives and experts in the field. False confessions, forensic evidence, finding missing persons, exposing fraud, exonerating the innocent. All areas that Francie and her guests will cover. And have they got stories to tell? Tune in and call in to the live show Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
Listen for Trust Across America every week on the Voice America Variety Channel. Tune in as host Jordan Kimmel is joined by national experts in the fields of accounting, finance, organizational behavior, and sustainability, as well as companies that are applying strategies that are enabling them to be recognized as doing the right thing by the American Trust Awards. Your host, Jordan Kimmel, is himself a trusted professional with years of experience in applying strategies and consulting with today's leading firms. Trust Across America is heard Wednesdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to cliparch@yahoo.com. That's cliparch@yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
What about the driveway? Should the architect design the driveway? My belief is the architect should design everything. And the driveway is actually really, really important. Think about when you're selling a house, the first impression that you get is the most important, the street view of the house. So when you're designing a house, when you're building your home, you should be thinking about selling it, and you should be thinking, what is the first impression someone gets of my house? When I design a home, I backtrack from the property as far down the street. I go as far down the street as I can to where I think is the first time somebody sees that house. And I start designing from that point. If I'm lucky, if it's, you know, a good lot, often it'll be a quarter mile or, you know, 1,000 feet down the road. That's when I start designing it. And they design the approach all the way up to the front door. So, first question is, when you see the house, when you first see it, what is the impression you get? It's the first picture. On my website, the Hardy House on there is one, the Hardy House, where I designed that house to first be seen from 500 feet away down the street. And it is absolutely incredibly impressive from that point. If you make that point really impressive, then people buy into it, and that's their vision of the house. So I talk about, you know, talk to people about the driveway. Well, the idea is when you enter a driveway from the street, you want to see your target. People mentally, when they make the turn now off of the street into the driveway, they have a target. It's the front door. You want them to see that front door as soon as they turn onto your driveway. And this is important from the driver's seat. The driver, and this is the same thing with the visibility of the house and the impression, is that what is seen from the driver's seat straight ahead and to their left, out their side window, that is a far bigger view than if it's to the right, out the passenger side. Out the passenger side, the car constrains the view. You know, the roof of the car and the door and everything constrains the view. Does it on the driver's side. So to the extent possible, you want to give the first impression of a house to the person sitting in the driver's seat of the car. Then, when you turn into the driveway, let them identify the target, the front door, and visually take them to the front door, their guest especially, and then only after they've approached, they've identified their target, they've moved up and into the property, only then do you take them off to the side to guest parking spaces or swing around the house to the garage. The worst possible setup is you have a driveway that runs from the house to the garage, the street to the garage. A driveway should first sweep by the front door, then around to the garage. And, you know, I say that, but there have been a few times when we've renovated a house, when I've gone to look at a house because the people say, what's wrong with this? You know, what's wrong with this picture? And that's one of the big things wrong. So we've actually ripped up driveways and moved them. And it's cost effective. Well, quite often if the driveway is 10 to 20 years old, it needs work anyway. But more so, moving the driveway so that you approach the front door of the house, not the garage, can be worth tens of thousands of dollars on resale. Let me give you a couple of examples of this. And, you know, a couple of examples. First one is a mansion. I was brought in late in the process and totally redesigned this mansion on a 16-acre hilltop. It sits on 16 acres on top of the hill. Really impressive. The original design, before I was involved, was to have the road coming up properly on the, you know, so that you face the house on the driver's side, coming up then to a circular drive in front of the house, a standard circular drive 45 feet wide. Okay, that's great. You see the house, you get up there, you've got a nice circular area in front of it. But to the scale of this house, it's nothing. And what I did was I looked at it because you came through woods and you drove 1,000 feet through the woods before you came out and first saw the house. And then you climbed up the hill to the house. I picked a point when you first came out of the woods and saw the house. This is about 300 feet from the house and say 40 feet down. Instead of that tight little circle in front of the house, we created a big circular drive that encompassed this whole front area. So you swept up, you came to this point where you first saw the house 300 feet away. And what we did is we cleared a lawn, that whole 300 feet. And you looked up this wide sweeping lawn. The lawn was as wide as the house and swept right up the hill, picture framed the mansion. And you drove up along one side with it clear that when you left, you would drive down around the other side. So it was a quarter mile loop just in the front circular drive of the house. And encased in that was this wide sweeping lawn. You could just envision it. If you think of the Kennedys at Hyannisport out on the lawn playing football, that's the sort of image that you get looking up at the house across this broad lawn. And in the winter, think of the snow, of the sledding down that hill. This is a mansion on a 16-acre hilltop. You could still improve the impression, the first impression of it, by how you set up the driveway. Very, on a smaller scale, although still quite an impressive house, I'm designing a house right now that sits in a prestigious neighborhood, sits on a very prestigious street where you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for a half-acre lot that's 110 feet wide. There's a great view out the back of the house, of the lot. There's actually a really good view out the front of the lot because it kind of sits on the ridge and it drops off to both sides. That's why you're paying so much money, so many hundreds of thousands of dollars for the lot. It's only 110 feet wide. One of my neatest tricks that I do is you evaluate the lot and you see if you can borrow yard from your neighbor. In this case, the neighbor's yard, you approach from the left, and which is good because, as I said, that's the driver's side. You get a better view. The view is more impressive. Well, the neighbor essentially left their front yard natural and built their house, so it's already built. We know nothing's going to change. And they have this front yard that is uphill to the right of their driveway, which means that they don't, in concept, they don't own it. I can borrow that front yard from them and use it as the visual front yard of my house. And if I set my house up so that the site triangle, as you drive up the street, you're now a couple of lots down from my house, but you're looking up to it. And I have borrowed almost 100 feet of the neighbor's front yard to visually become part of mine. Now, instead of having a house on a 110-foot wide lot, I've got a house that appears to be on a 200-foot wide lot. It will be the most impressive front yard on the street. Because understanding the concept of borrowing visual space. To continue that, the other thing that we did was you saw the house and it got this great impression of it sitting up the hill and wrapping around. I did it in an L-shaped, a kind of even open L. So it was, you know, like 110 degrees rather than 90, that wrapped the front. And instead of seeing 100 feet of house front, or actually, no, it's not 100. Instead of seeing the 80 foot of house front that's allowed in a 110 foot wide lot, the house wraps. So you see 80 plus 60 or 140 feet of house frontage as you go up the hill from what appears to be a 200 foot wide lot. Like I said, I borrowed visually and creating this great impression with the front of the house. Then, because it slopes uphill, and I continued far up the hill, almost to the other side of my lot, before turning in with the driveway. Big advantage there is the driveway becomes a lot more level. It has a gentle uphill slope instead of the steep uphill slope that would have been if I'd started down at the left-hand corner of the lot. The other thing is you get this whole impression of driving by this big front yard before you turn in the driveway. Then, when you turn in the driveway, you've now actually gone, the garages are in an L coming out towards the street on the right-hand side. When you turn in the driveway, you're right in front of the garages, so you get the front end, which looks like a very nice cottage, impressive front end. But then you're turned back and aimed to the front door. So that now you're driving up this nice ascending driveway across a auto court to the front door of the house. The garages, and there are four of them, there are four garage doors, is a huge garage. It's kind of to your right and behind you. So you don't notice that. What you notice is the front door. And the front door is really impressive. This house is going to look so big coming up the street. It actually isn't. It actually is the same size or smaller than most of the other houses in this row. The impression is going to be really big because you're going to see 140 feet of front instead of 80 feet. the impression of the front yard is going to be really big. You'd think you're seeing a 200-foot wide front yard instead of 110. This is what an architect can do, and this is what planning on the front end of the house can do. The converse side, and, well, okay, let me jump back and just quickly, before the break, answer a very simple question that is probably on most people's minds. I get asked all the time, asphalt or concrete? We're talking about driveways. The basic choice is, do I have an asphalt driveway or a concrete driveway? I really believe in asphalt. It is because concrete driveways, unless you color them, are white. They really stand out, at least on the East Coast, anywhere where you have grass and woods and trees. The asphalt driveway really stands out, and I think it's an eyesore. Not the asphalt, I mean the concrete driveway really stands out as an eyesore. It's bright white in this green and brown landscape. The asphalt driveway is a dark gray. It kind of blends in. Visually, it's soft. And I really appreciate that visual softness because I think the driveways are offensive things in front of a house. So the more you can visually soften them, either by using asphalt or by coloring the concrete, the more they fade into the background and allow the pretty things, the house, the landscaping, the fountain, to allow the pretty things to stand out. The other thing with asphalt versus concrete is you have to maintain asphalt on a regular basis. Every 5 years, you have to recoat it with a sealant, or every 3 years even. And it's possible every 15 years, you can find yourself top coating the whole thing with a new inch and a half of asphalt. But that's relatively inexpensive. Concrete looks great when it's poured. A contractor talking about this says there's only two types of concrete. Concrete that has cracked and concrete that has yet to be poured. Meaning, it's pretty likely if you put it in a concrete driveway, it's going to crack. And unless you plan and put your control joints in the right places, it's going to crack where you don't want it to. It is very expensive to repair concrete. And I'd rather go with the asphalt rather than the concrete because of the expense. Environmentally, they're actually both about the same. They both have the same carbon footprint, and both have some of the same negative things in them. So we can talk about other, you know, maybe I can talk later about the other things you can do. I actually like a gravel driveway. It's very environmentally friendly. It is very soft on the ground. It's also inexpensive, and it's low-key. And part of me really likes the idea of low-key. Or brick pavers, grass pavers. When we come back, we'll talk about how to present the front of your house so that it is really impressive.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Conservation starts with us. Learn about environmental concerns each week when you tune in to Our Wild World with host Ellie Weiss.
Our show centers on Africa each week and what's being done to save our wildlife, ecology, and ourselves. However, we'll also discuss what's going on closer to home. And most importantly, we'll let you know what can be done in our own backyards by featuring guest experts and featuring your questions and answers. Listen every Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Voice America Network proudly presents The Catherine Zox Show for women, men, children, and families. Catherine magically combines her compassion, experience, and talent to bring listeners a show that's upbeat, informative, and yes, a little sassy. Tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern, to The Catherine Zox Show on the Voice America channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned into Winning the Dream Home Race with your host, Steve Klipp. We'd love to hear from you about our program. Call in to 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or send an email to clipart@yahoo.com. That's C-L-I-P-P-A-R-C-H at yahoo.com. Now, back to winning the dream home race.
So I've talked to you about how to place a house on the land to make it most impressive and effective from the street as you approach. And I've talked to you about how to maximize the views from your lot. And maybe not enough, but that's the other thing, is maximizing the views. Those are things, two aspects of setting up the site plan that an architect should do. The other one is, how do you set up the site, your lot, to be used? You know, how do you live in your lot? And I try to talk to people about the concept of indoor rooms and outdoor rooms. Of course, you understand the indoor rooms of your house, but your yard can also be set up to create outdoor rooms. The first of those, obviously, a porch is an outdoor room. But looking beyond the porch, so is the patio. It is a space, and it essentially has, a room is something that has kind of perimeters to it that is in some way enclosed to make a space. And patios typically are that, well, or a deck. And quite often, so is the lawn. I do a number of lawns where, if you recognize the lawn as being a room with a border that defines it. And the other way is a lawn that you want to just sweep off like an infinity edge pool, you know, into the great beyond. This is, and the idea of the outside as outdoor rooms is another reason why I think the architect should set up the framework of the site. You know, how do you use the front porch? And how does the front porch relate to the front yard and to the street? How much of it is open and inviting? Hi, I'm on the front porch, come talk to me. And how much of it is, okay, I'm in my outdoor room looking out on the world, but that doesn't mean, you know, you're free to approach. Okay, in that respect, when I do a house, I set up the outdoor rooms. I set up how you live on the site. And then talk to the landscape architect. I don't know anything about plants or trees, or not much. And to help me flesh out this outdoor space, the same way, at that point, you bring in the interior decorator to help you flesh out the interior space. I think one mind and one control works best in getting a cohesive, unified plan, a cohesive, unified house. When I talk about indoor rooms and outdoor rooms, probably the best example that I know of, and a lot of you have been there, is the Vanderbilt Mansion, Biltmore, up in Asheville, North Carolina. Biltmore is the largest private house in the United States, something like 250,000 square feet. And it was planned both inside and outside. The inside of the house was done by some great architect. I forget his name. The outside was done by Frederick Law Olmsted, who also designed Central Park in New York. And this is one of his crowning achievements, was Biltmore House. What he did is he set up outdoor rooms and grand vistas. It sits on, you know, thousands of acres, and the backyard is Pisgah National Forest, which is 50,000 acres. But you approach the house the same way I talked about that mansion on the hilltop. When you approach Biltmore House, there's this huge outdoor forecourt where that is probably 2 acres within that forecourt of grass in the middle of a large rectangular but essentially circular driveway. So your first impression of the house is from 500 feet away across this giant outdoor room that is bounded by the road and by trees on the outside of the road. Set up the outdoor room to approach the house. Inside the house, you turn around. And this is one of my things I really love and use over and over again, is that you place an object in the landscape as a visual draw. In this case, you turn back and look down that forecourt and then up a set of grand white stairs to a grand lawn that proceeds up for another quarter mile. And at the top of that is a pergola. That's a huge outdoor room, and it's defined by, you know, that visual object at the end of it. When I talked about the house in that I went to, that the grand house that's kind of sat down from the road at the beginning of this, the dining room, I told you, looks out onto the neighbor's backyard out of this really, really big, grand picture window. A way to fix that would be the same thing, is that you put a visual anchor outside, put it right up to the property line, some Japanese cryptomeria, some nice screening trees, and in front of that, a statue. I don't care what is a statue. I don't care whether it's modern or, you know, or classical or whatever. It is a visual draw, and it gives you, allows you the feeling that you're looking out of the room, but, you know, you still feel you got outside, even though it's a very short space, because your eye is drawn to the end of it. And these are tricks to improve, you know, improve space. At Biltmore, there's a side garden. You step out, and there is a walled side garden that is exquisitely landscaped, you know, boxwoods, all sorts of beautiful flowers and plants. And it is truly an outdoor room for strolling on a huge scale. Contrasting with that, out the back of Biltmore is a terrace that then drops off 50 feet down to the ground. You look out on the river, and beyond that, the Pisgah National Forest. So you've got this incredible unlimited view, you know, 50 miles to Blowing Rock across the forest, and you're standing up above it. This is one of the neatest yin-yangs that I think you can set up, is the idea of the unlimited view and the enclosed outdoor space. And Biltmore, and I use it because I'm sure quite a few of you have seen it, is one of the masterpieces of this inside-outside combination. Now, you can use that same principle on smaller houses, on, you know, on any house. I had a house that I completed last year. It's a Tuscan villa. That's really neat. It's built out of AAC block and a lot of great things about it. But it sits up a really steep hillside, and we were able to do the same sort of thing on a more modest scale, which is the front of the house is 3 stories tall. The main level is at least a story out of the ground, if not more, and looks out on a big view. You can look for 30 miles out the front. The back of the house is built into the hillside. And what we did was we carved it out. And if you're going to carve out the hillside, I talked about these where the patio is below grade or below the surrounding land. Understand what you're doing and, you know, and play up to it. Make it something special. In this case, what we did is to the side of the house, and really neat, we've got indoor rooms and outdoor rooms. In this case, 2 walls of the house, a corner, all opens up with these, you know, these large folding doors. Well, we've got a whole corner of the house that opens up onto a covered porch. And from that covered porch, you go out into a outdoor room that is set up at the far end, draw your eye, is a pizza oven. Really neat, built into the hillside. In front of that is a fire pit. The whole impression of this indoor-outdoor living space is just incredible. If you understand, it's all architecture. It's all living spaces, and they all need to work together. And I think that's the big thing I was trying to say today, is that you have to think about maximize every benefit from a site. Maximize the views. And I'm being told it's time to leave, so I'll leave. Please come and listen to me next week. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Winning the Dream Home Race. Please join your host, Steve Klipp, again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll help you come one step closer to building or renovating your dream home.